This is Scenic Roots live in the library, and while every session in the studio in the library is, quote, live, in the sense that all of the musicians are playing together in one of the two rooms in the studio, and the resulting recording hasn't been sweetened in any way, nobody's gone back in to overdub additions to the recordings, it's an ideal representation, really, of the band or the individual musician playing as they would in a club, with the added advantage of Sam Mensah's excellent engineering and the superb sonics of a fully equipped and wonderfully warm digital studio. In some ways, it's an ideal live performance. On any given week, that's what you hear on Scenic Roots. But this week, for the first time in, what is it, about 3 years that we've been doing sessions in the library now, this is a session that is truly live, in the sense that everything you were about to hear was created in the moment, in the studio. Ben was responding to the prompts that he had asked me to give him, and then making up the composition in the moment. And so, there were gaps. He would switch between instruments and that sort of thing. So from my perspective, while we were making it, it seemed a little disjointed. It's been edited and tightened up. But other than that, this is music created in the moment. There's inherent risks in that, of course. But our guest, Ben Van Winkle, is a truly gifted player, singer, and composer.
What's up, Chattanooga? My name is Ben Van Winkle, and I am currently live in the library. That's right, our very own Chattanooga library. We've got this incredible studio that actually anybody can use. Anybody in Chattanooga can use it if you reserve it. So that's why today, for my Live in the Library debut, I wanted to do something a little different. I'm actually in here prepared to compose live. I'm going to use the studio like a studio. I'm going to write stuff live. And so right now, I've got all my instruments surrounded by me here in the tracking room. I've got my cello. I've got my two guitars. I've got my guzheng. And of course, I've got my whistle and my beatbox. So all of these things I'm prepared to use using my loop pedals and other things to compose stuff live. And to prove that it's live, guess what? We've got Chattanooga's very own Richard Winham in the house. Richard, would you please say hello?
No, I'd be happy to. Yeah. And I'm still wondering exactly what my role in this is, but I'll endeavor to live up to what I know is going to be interesting, because as I was just telling Sam, every time you and I have done anything together, or you have done something and I've watched it, it wasn't what I expected.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I don't know what today is going to be. I definitely don't know what to expect myself. But let me explain to everybody who's listening, and to you again, exactly what Richard will be doing, what you'll be doing. So everybody, I gave Richard a list of prompts to give me for each song so that I have to respond to them. So these songs will be legitimately live. I'm making them up right now. I believe the things I asked him to choose are the key of the song, the tempo of the song, the three main instruments I'll use. I might use a few more, but I'll start with those. And then also the vibe, so like the mood or this, some sort of inspirational word. So does that all make sense, Richard?
I think the mood will be determined by the instruments we choose, won't it?
Yeah, it probably could be, but then again, it could be like a challenge. If you give me like a really happy instrument and a sad mood, I'll have to be creative. Or maybe like some really crappy key like F sharp minor and make it happy. I'm like, what? But, you know, that could lead to some inspiration and all that. So I guess, without further ado,
we'll start.
Let's get started. What are the first four prompts?
Oh, man. A major for a key.
A major, okay.
Since this is the first tune, let's make it bright, upbeat. You know,
bright, upbeat.
Good intro tune.
Okay.
I love the cello and I love the way you play it, so that's the first thing that occurs to me every time, and I'm going to have to discipline myself on that, because my first inclination is to say, Ben, just play the cello. So let's say cello, guitar, and beatbox.
Cello, guitar, beatbox. All right. Let's start with that. All right, guys. Wish me luck. What have I got to lose? I don't know. give me a break if it's bad, okay? All right, let's figure out a tempo here. There's that one.
So while I was listening to that, Ben, it occurred to me to ask you, so did you first begin as a musician playing cello?
Yes. Actually, boys choir. The very first thing I did was boys choir.
Ah. Yeah, that makes sense. Because you have a really nice, you have a command of your voice. You can take it in a lot of different places. So it never occurred to me to think of you as a trained singer, but you are, right? You had some measure of training, at least.
Okay. Yes, definitely we should say that. I almost want to say no because I've never had, like, private instruction, but I've sung a lot, so yes.
And you were guided, at least.
I was indeed guided.
By a choir master, I assume.
Yes.
So when did you start playing the cello?
I started the cello when I was 9. So what is that, 19 years ago? No, something like that.
You are one person I can think off the top of my head of maybe on the one hand, the number of people in town who use the studio the way you do. At what point did you start thinking of the studio as an instrument and not just as a place to record something you'd already conceived?
With loop pedals. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the past 3 years has been a quest to finding studio quality with loop pedals, because loop pedals are amazing because they're so simple and you're so limited. But they are limited in ways about audio quality, and I wanted to have really nice cello sounds. No loop pedals are made to have really good mic inputs. I mean, you can have one input and it'd be like a vocal mic. But today I've set up, through my looping setup today, all of my instruments into really high quality microphones using a lot of the library's gear, which is just, it's awesome. I think I've kind of finally figured out what I want to do here.
Well, the interesting thing about what you're doing is that even though this is all your conception, you've included me in it, but it's collaborative beyond that, because it occurred to me that Sam, who's engineering the session, is ultimately going to mix what you've done.
Yes.
And so in that sense, he has a voice in it too.
Yeah. I've really appreciated all the help Sam has done here today. And by the way, like, that's the amazing thing about this studio is that Sam or whoever's engineering will encourage the user to actually do the stuff themselves. And so Sam's definitely helped out so much in this process, but I've also he's allowed me to actually use the computer and set the preamps and plug in the mics. So it's just such a great resource for us in Chattanooga.
It is. Sam is a natural teacher. He's also a great engineer.
Yeah.
And he's a musician.
Yeah.
So he understands music making from the inside, which I would think would be an asset.
Absolutely.
For anybody working with him. So for this next piece, let's make the key D minor. And I want you to use the Dujin.
Oh, the Gujin.
Dujin. So where does that come
from? It's actually a Chinese instrument, and it's tuned in D pentatonic. I almost want to ask to cheat and do it in B minor, because then I could use all the strings, because it's tuned in D major, essentially.
Let's do that then.
Let's do B minor.
We'll make it B minor.
Okay. I haven't actually done that.
It's an interesting instrument in that it looks a bit like a dulcimer and sounds a bit like a koto, but it's bigger than either a koto or a dulcimer.
Yeah. Let me see if I can get it where you can hear it. That's just an example of what it sounds like. It's that instrument. You've heard it in movies and everything.
And it's always used in that kind of almost cliched single note playing, you know.
But you can do some really cool stuff.
Let me. That's what I'm interested in knowing and seeing what else you'll do with it.
Actually, I'll save it. I have an idea already. So we're doing B minor. What else was there? So we're doing Gujin and two other instruments.
Well, your voice, because that's definitely an instrument that should be part of every composition that you do. And the guitar, you have a guitar that looks like the guitar that Robert Johnson was cradling in that photograph of him.
So this is my classical guitar?
Yeah, it looks almost like a figure eight.
Oh, yeah, this thing. This is a beautiful guitar. My landlord, Jim Palmer, is let me borrowing. I forgot to mention, I also have my bass cello, which is like an electric guitar. It's a cello-turned electric guitar, essentially, with a low string. So cool. I'll stick. And then what's the vibe on this one? So B minor, Gujin.
Upbeat. Definitely upbeat.
Upbeat.
Yeah.
Upbeat. And was there anything else I asked? Tempo. Okay, yeah. So, all right. Without further ado, here's a B minor piece, Gujin, upbeat. Thank you.
This is Scenic Roots, live from the library with Ben Van Winkle.
All right.
Very nice.
That was a little long.
Yeah, it was sweet.
Thank you.
When you first started playing the cello, what was your conception of the instrument? What did you want to, what kind of music did you want to make with it?
Well, when I first started playing the cello, when I was 9, I literally chose it because it was the biggest thing there was. Because I didn't know about the bass yet. I saw a string quartet. And I guess I just envisioned classical music at that point, but just sounds. It was cool sounds. I think that's what it was. And they played a pizzicato piece on that first day, and I've always loved the sound of that pizzicato cello. And I had no idea that I'd be doing what I'm doing today, but maybe those initial ideas are still present. Those initial things that I liked about it, I think, are still there, yeah.
Oh, I think it is. the notion of playing the instrument pizzicato, because so much of what you do is rhythmic.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Actually, you know what? I got a lot of that stuff from playing the guitar on some John Mayer songs, like that slapping thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I learned a lot of my rhythm from guitar playing, actually. But yeah, definitely. I strive for the rhythm. You got to feel it. You got to have that beat behind it. And sometimes it's kind of hard to feel with the bow, because the bow is a little more ambiguous. You try to start it right on the beat, but you can also kind of swell it in. So pizzicato is really nice for when you want that rhythm. But yeah.
I was thinking it'd be interesting to hear what you would do with both cellos, the electric cello and the acoustic cello.
Yeah. I could definitely, and I can bow that cello too. I just tend to pit it because it provides me the bass sound if I need it. All right, so are you thinking two cellos on the next one?
Two cellos and a guitar, yeah.
Two cellos and a guitar.
And this is just the way my mind works, but I always think of the cello as a somewhat meditative instrument.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, so maybe meditative, is that the word?
Yeah, so in a minor key.
In a minor key.
Yeah.
Do you have a letter you like?
Let's do D minor. We were going to do D minor last time.
D minor. That's a great key for the cello. Okay. D minor, meditative, two cellos and a guitar. Okay. I can do this. Let's go a little slower this time.
Thank you.
in a lot of places, but you know.
That was cool.
I think there were some things in there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, that was three songs. How are you doing on time? You want to do a fourth?
I think we can do as many as you want. Who are your heroes?
Who are my heroes? Maurice Ravel. Yeah, Maurice Ravel is definitely my favorite composer. He just takes you places. His compositions are just so lush. When I think of musicians, I don't know, Yu Zhiwang came to mind. She's an amazing pianist. Heroes. Daniel Miller Schott is one of my favorite cellists. That's a good question. I should think of that more often. Who are my heroes?
Well, you've internalized Ravel.
Yes. Yeah.
That shows in what you're doing.
You think so?
Yeah, because I hadn't really thought about it, but your work seems to be informed by the Impressionists.
Yeah, definitely. The ninths, at least definitely my orchestrations when I started composing, and I think I brought some of that back to looping and sort of my pop style stuff, especially just the arrangements themselves and the chords I choose. Impressionism is my favorite.
At the same time, especially the piece that you wrote for, I don't know, it's like 12 or 13 pieces that you played at Barking Legs, 12 or 13 instruments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That reminded me of Gershwin.
Huh. Well, you know, Gershwin studied with Ravel.
Makes sense.
He was sort of the American version, I guess.
In some ways, yeah, because he mixed Impressionism with jazz, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And they were sort of contemporary. I think, I'm not an expert on this, but I think Gershwin was just a little younger than Ravel. But Ravel spoke highly of jazz. He definitely listened to jazz and knew about it. Because this is like the, you know, the first 20 years, 30 years of the 19th century. Or wait, no, sorry, 20th century. But yeah, Gershwin brought, he like almost purposefully used jazz in his classical stuff. And
it was the music of the New World.
Yeah.
You know. And I imagine Ravel probably heard it the same way.
I bet.
You know, that this is a whole different set of timbres and moods and rhythms.
Yeah. It's funny because Ravel was is one of the first composers to actually record themselves. One of the first, because recording technology was coming out then. And I wonder what Ravel would have been able to make with what I'm using right now, because he probably did record some stuff years in composition process at the end, but I don't even know if that's the case, because everything he wrote was at the piano immediately to pen. But there's so much that I'm able to do when I don't even think about the music I'm making. I just do it, and then I can write it down later. And if he had that capability, I wonder if it would have been an asset, or maybe it would have slowed him down. I don't know. It's one of those questions. Like, is this the best way? But it's super powerful. I can tell you that, being able to record like this, any instrument I wanted, any time.
I can see that. It seems, to my mind, akin to free writing.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't matter what you put down, just put anything down. The first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And then worry about shaping it later.
And that's the important part, is let it come to your mind. That's my first goal, is to hear it first, or whatever you want to say first. I said that a lot. It's easy to just pick up an instrument and start playing something, but it's usually way better if you hear it first and then you play it, or it comes to mind first.
So as a composer, first you were a player.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about writing something for yourself to play rather than playing somebody else's work.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you start working the way you do now, where it's, as you said, you can envision something, you can hear something in your head, and then you've got all this hardware and software to help you realize the ineffable, almost, right? Something that,
yeah,
it's right on the edge of your consciousness, kind of thing.
So what's the timeline here? I guess I started first writing songs on instruments, and I would have the full length done and able to be performed on my cello or my guitar. And I think that was really helpful because one of the hardest things about composition is pacing. So being able to perform the entirety of the structure is really helpful to composition. And then I think the first time I started converting those songs to sheet music to let other people play was when I really became more adept at composition. Because then I was asking myself, oh, what could go here? What could fill this spot? And in that moment, I would be sitting with my computer it's not recording software, it's composition software. And I always say that whistling were my flutes, humming were my clarinets, and cello was my string. So I would play it, and then I'd listen, and then if I whistled a tune, I'd be like, oh, okay, and then I would just transcribe that immediately. But that was definitely more of like the organic composition performance sort of technique. Whereas what I'm doing now is like my loop setup, which I've always kind of struggled with them sort of fighting each other. It's either like I only want to compose because I want to play with other people, I want to write for them, or I want to sit and be by myself and record loops and not even think about composition at all and just let it come out, let it hear it and play it. But I think with this setup that I'm using right now, I'm kind of able to do a little bit of both.
That's how it strikes me.
Yeah. It feels good.
You know, it sounds as if you are layering idea upon idea, much as you were saying before, when you write it out and as a composer, then looking at it and saying, okay, so what could I put here or what could I put there?
Yeah.
What different colors could I add here? It seems to me, as you say, it's all of a piece.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that if you were working with other people, you'll have other consciousness involved.
Yeah.
And they'll have their own take. Even if you write it down, they have their own take, right, on how it might sound.
Yes. And every time I play with people, I say, oh, this is what I want to do. Why am I looping at all? Write for other people. Play with other people. They'll bring more to it. You can do more when you have more people. Because looping, you always have to kind of change stuff. And it takes long to set it up. However, looping is so powerful for composition because it's all one person. You're able to make all the decisions live. So I think what's probably going to happen is these tunes, maybe even the ones I wrote today, I'm going to arrange them and then write them out and then perform them with people. So like that's why I didn't necessarily want to do a performance in the studio. I wanted to compose in the studio because when I'm alone, that's kind of when I'm allowed to compose. I can boss myself around. But when I have other people, you want to work with them and you want to inspire them and allow them to be their own musicians. So I think that's like step two. And right now we're in the studio, step one, composing. And you helped with that, by the way.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm so happy I could do that. I'm wondering if you've ever tried something like this with a group of musicians where you haven't got anything written down and just bring everybody together and say, let's see what happens.
Not maybe one time, but not necessarily to this degree of setup or preparation. And I want to, like where I'd still be in control of the loops, but I could loop other people. And in fact, a lot of the people I'm working with in Figment, especially Gordon, the clarinetist, and Nathan Shu, the percussionist, we kind of did a trial thing once. But that is probably the ultimate goal, is to be able to have a studio where I can loop just like I am right now, except I have some other musicians with me and I can hum a tune for them and then they'll play it because they're that good. They can play by ear. So that is actually, you're right, that is a big goal and probably close on the horizon actually to be able to do that.
Yeah, and now you've said it. I'd love to, you know, come back and we'll do this part two.
Yeah.
But next time with other players with you.
Yes, absolutely.
Just to see what happens.
Just name the date. Yeah.
All right. So if you want to do one more tune, let's say A major.
A major.
A bright, upbeat, you know, coda, a closing piece.
Okay.
Whistling, electric cello.
Okay.
And guitar.
Whistling, electric cello, guitar. I can do it. Let's do it. Let's do pretty fast on this one. I stare into the emptiness and I fall. Let's end with that. Okay. Oh, that one felt fun.
That was brilliant. I think you outdid yourself on that one.
Oh, really? Okay.
Boom, 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 boom. I mean, that melody is going to be in my head for a while now.
Oh, yes.
It's like Radiohead with James Jameson playing bass. There's a song on the album, Driving Through, is that what it's called?
Driving Buddy.
Yeah. No, that's not the one then. It has Through in the title.
Through is the name of that one song, Through.
Through. It's a great track.
Thank you so much.
That? Can you play that?
I actually can't.
How did you make that record?
So, for everyone who's listening, the record Richard is talking to is not even out yet, actually. It's called Santeron. And so a lot of those are songs I composed while playing the cello. And actually, a couple of them, Santeron itself, was a loop song, just like this. And I composed them for the ensemble I play with, the Figment Chamber Ensemble. So the album is a collaboration, Ben Van Winkle and the Figment Chamber Ensemble. And
there's other people playing on the record with you.
Yes. So the debut album, which we're hoping to release in September at the Walker Theater. That was going to be last year. So
I know it. Oh, that's so cool. So everything's just going to be pushed back a year.
Yes. Yeah. And also, by the way, Chattanoogans, you can buy the album. It's just not available for streaming, and it's not officially released, but they're here. And so actually, if you go to Yellow Racket Records, they've got them for sale there. And I think we're hoping to do a show or two even before that, if everything goes well, and they'll be available there as well. So this is our first album, Santeron, which I'm really excited to release. I've been waiting on it. It's been ready for over a year now. So,
at least.
And I think actually,
when did you give it to me? That was at least a year ago, wasn't it? That you gave it to me.
I think I gave it to you last winter, so last January or February. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I got the hard copies in the mail in I think April. So
and
I've had
you,
those.
And
for
you did a release party at Yellow Racket at some point.
Yes.
Right?
So I've done a physical locals only release. And it was basically just a hangout at Yellow Racket Records, which just opened also. It's our new record store. So if you want to...
It was in the spring when you did that. The spring.
I think it was summertime.
No, wait a minute. Summer of last year.
Yeah, that was summer.
Yeah,
that
towards the fall.
Actually, I think it was September. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's technically done and it's technically available, but only physical copies, which I think is kind of cool because it gives a little more exclusivity until it comes out. I mean, I want it out, but... this might end up being the best way. It might end up working towards our favor, actually.
Well, it's not going to hurt you.
No.
It's only in your mind that that album's a year old. It's not going to sound that way to anybody else.
Exactly. You know? Yeah, and thank you for reminding me that, because it does feel like a year old now.
You know, so, wow, that's brilliant. I really hope that you can make that happen in the Walker, because I'd like to be there for that. That'd be fun.
We technically have it reserved. It's just a matter of when it's open again.
Yeah, exactly.
And then first come, first serves on picking the date.
Because they're not open for booking yet, are they?
Right, because it's a city-run thing, I guess. So it actually is contingent on the city opening their venues.
Well,
but that's okay.
In the library in May, so presumably
really?
Other places in the city will be open too.
Well, and I don't know, I might cut this next part out, but there's a rumor that Nightfall will be happening.
There is.
And if it does, I'm on the list in June. So
I had a conversation with Carla a few weeks ago, and she said she's going to start the season in June and it'll run later. And that for the first month, it'll be all local acts.
Is this something we can play on the radio, what I'm saying right now?
Yeah, why not?
Do you think she would mind?
No, she won't mind.
So then in that case, I'm booked on June 11th, Friday, June 11th. We are, and that'll be all 10 of us, Figment Chamber Ensemble.
Oh, brilliant.
But that's...
No, that's in Miller Plaza, right?
Miller Plaza. And we're going to do the park stage. And here's another rumor. I don't know if I should be saying all this, but the rumor is we're going to be playing both stages, actually. And they're going to have no set time, set break, because the second stage, which I'll be on, the park stage, will be ready at the end of the first set. So there's no turnover time.
I got you. So
they're going to flip it, yeah.
Nightfall at both ends, Miller Plaza and Miller Park.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I will send Carla an email and run all that by her before we put it on the radio, just to make okay. sure that we're not, you know, stealing her thunder.
Yeah.
But at the same time...
We spoke contingent about it. I think we weren't saying it was... We said if a lot, so...
Well, she's smart.
She's smart.
She understands PR, and that's the best way to do PR.
Yeah.
To make it sound like you're giving people something they're not supposed to get.
Oh, know? Yeah.
You know.
Huh.
Cool.
Well,
looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to close with a composition that you've already written? Is there anything you can play by yourself?
Let me see what I can do. So, everybody, thank you so much for listening, Chattanoogans. I don't know if you knew this. I am a Chattanoogan, so it's really always a good. It's a pleasure to play for y'all. I know a lot of y'all who are listening. So I'm going to do one more improvised tune here in the library, and then. And then I'll see you around next time. Thanks again, Richard.
Thank you.
right, we'll leave it at that.
From the studio in the Chattanooga Public Library, our guest, Ben Van Winkle, has been creating spontaneous compositions. Ben Van Winkle finished an album of his songs last year, just as the pandemic hit last spring. He and his Figment Chamber Ensemble were all set to play the songs in the Walker Theatre last year, but that was postponed. The thinking now is that they will be able to play the show, with any luck, in the fall. I'll keep you posted on that. This is from the album titled Saunter On, a song called Through. Listener-supported public radio, this is Scenic Roots, live in the library.